Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down.
Welcome to Southern Sense, which is common sense, and we won't tolerate any nonsense. So tune in and stand by.
Well, good afternoon to another Freaky Friday here on Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. This wonderful, sunny, and warm June 10th afternoon here in South Carolina. I'm your host, Ann Ubellis, and get ready for another hour and a half of BS from me. Our call line is open, and the phone number is 917-889-3675, and our chat room is open. I just posted up a link into the chat room, just to be funny, a little twit pic I had made a while back. It's our new Border Patrol agent, so just click on the twit pic and have a good laugh. We do have a couple of local announcements going on. It's a reminder that we do have a special election going on here in the city of Buford, July 19th. This will be for the seat of city council that was held by Gary Fordham, who had unfortunately passed away this past April. So please remember, there is a special election here for the city of Buford, city council seat of Gary Fordham, on July 19th. And I'm looking at the calendar, and July 19th is the third Tuesday in July, so please be ready for that. Also, this is a reminder, we still need help with the victims of the flooding and the tornadoes, and there's still disasters going out in the Midwest and the South. So please donate generously to the Red Cross. Go to redcross.org and make your donation, or simply use your cell phone and dial 90999 and text the word, one word, Red Cross to them. What this will do is a simple $10 donation to the Red Cross. What is going on here locally in South Carolina, I've been speaking about the Lieutenant Dan weekend that's being hosted by the Independence Fund. They are going to be having a fundraising event this afternoon that is here in Buford, and this is going to be on Boundary Street at the new Chick-fil-A. And this will be from 5:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. That's at 2405 Boundary Street. They will donate proceeds from the sales to the Lieutenant Dan weekend to help kick it off. And this is to help America's severely wounded veterans. These are the veterans from the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. So, you know, they come back, and a lot of times the military, once they discharge them, they do not get adequate medical care. They don't get it for the PTSD. They don't always get it for their physical needs. And you have men and women that are coming back that have given their all. So please, if you are in the Buford area, please go to the Chick-fil-A at 2405 Boundary Street and make a purchase there. There will be additional, they'll also be selling T-shirts and wristbands, and they're going to be selling discounted tickets for the September 16th concert that is going to be featured actor Gary Sinise and his Lieutenant Dan band. Other fundraisers going on this month for the Lieutenant Dan weekend. There will be a dinner for the troops at Bella Luna Cafe. That's a new cafe that opened up on St. Helena Island here on Sea Island Parkway. That will be June 15th. In Port Royal, there's going to be a Forgotten Sons poker run. That's June 18th. And here on Ladies Island, there's an ice cream place called Berry Island Cafe. It's not just ice cream. It's also, you know, they have sandwiches and stuff like that, and they also do catering. Berry Island Cafe is right down the street from me here on Ladies Island. That will be June 22nd, and it will be all you can eat. As a matter of fact, that is a Wednesday, and since that's nearby, I may be going to that. If you need any more information on these fundraising activities for Lieutenant Dan weekend, I have a contact here. His name is Dick Clark, and I'm serious. That really is his name, Dick Clark. And you can email him at Dick Clark. He spells it with an E at the end of Clark, D-I-C-K-C-L-A-R-K-E, at ISLC.net. Or you can call him directly at 843-812-7787. Lieutenant Dan weekend is sneaking up on us. September is right around the corner. Excuse me. I seem to have a frog in my throat. Or maybe the alligator I put up in the twit pick. excuse me. So, yeah, please. September is coming right around the corner, and they do need funds to kick this weekend off. And I'm telling you, 100% goes to the benefit. They don't take salaries. They don't have administrative. Of course, these people work out of their businesses, their homes, everything and anything you can do to help these troops. And I'm telling you, it's a phenomenal, phenomenal charity to donate to. And I see I got Dirty White Trash out there. Hi there. And I see I got Mike out there. Hey, Mike, you're going to make a trip down here to Beaufort for this weekend. Love to see you, baby. Let me know if you're going to do that. Now, our call line, like I said, is open. It's 917-889-3675. And the chat room is open, as you can see. Since Mike is here on the line, I have to do this for him. And he knows what I'm talking about. I'm just going to try to find it. And I know I have it right here, Mike. Just bear with me. I know where I put it. And I think I just scanned past it a little too fast. Mike, this goes out to you.
Okay, Dwayne, we're going to try it once more. Just remember now, introduce yourself and read what's on the paper in front of you. You got it?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay, fine. Dwayne Staub, Substance Abuse Awareness Campaign. This is take 9. Dwayne, that's your cue.
Oh, right. Anytime you're ready.
We're ready, Dwayne. Dwayne, go.
Oh. Hi. This is Dwayne Staub of Blacktooth. Kids, when you drink and drive...
No, Dwayne. No, cut. It's not when you drink and drive.
Oh, all right. Let me do it again.
Yeah, good idea. This is Dwayne Staub, PSA, take 10.
Hi, this is Dwayne Staub. When I drink and drive, I'll...
Cut, Dwayne. Dwayne, this spot is supposed to be against driving while intoxicated.
What?
Never mind. We'll do it one more time. And remember, say, don't do drugs. And if you must drink this holiday weekend, don't drive. You got it?
I told you I got it.
Fine. Dwayne Staub, PSA, take, 11.
I'm Dwayne Staub telling you, if you do drugs this weekend, don't drive.
Wrong again, Dwayne. It's don't do drugs. Don't do drugs.
That's what I said.
No, it's not. It's not even close to what you said.
You come in this booth, I'll show you how close it was, Sherlock.
We're going to do it again, Dwayne. Say don't do drugs. If you must drink this holiday weekend, do not drive. Take 12.
This is Dwayne Staub. Weekends are for drunks. Do drugs.
Okay, Dwayne, thank you very much for coming in. I think with a little editing, we've got something we can use.
Don't do drugs. And if
you must drink
this holiday weekend, don't.
That goes out to you, Mike. Now, I got to let you know, I got my beast back. I have my computer back. It was driving me crazy when I was on the radio on Tuesday. I was working between three different computers, and it was hard for me to follow what was going on in the chat room, watching the screen, listening to my guest, and going between three machines. I am so happy the beast is back. So I got the beast. I can see the chat room. I can see everyone out there. And I don't know who this blue is, but it sounds like one heck of a person. So anyway, I want to welcome everyone that is listening in and that's in the chat room. We do have a whole mess of stuff going on, and this afternoon we're going to have our South Carolina Attorney General, Alan Wilson. He will be returning as a guest today. He will be on at 3 o'clock. We're going to hope that we can get him for more than 10 or 15 minutes. And you know how they tell me 10 or 15 minutes. I always manage to tweak him past that. So we'll see what we can do. There has been so much going on. I swear I have about half a foot high of folders sitting in front of me with everything that's been going on the last few days. It is absolutely nuts out there. I don't know how many of you out there heard about what just happened, hit the fan yesterday. The White House is establishing what they call a rural council. A rural council. Now, they announced this council saying that while rural communities face challenges, they also present economic potential. Gee, Boeing is coming to a rural area in South Carolina, and we're fighting the unions. Economic potential. Interesting. They further to go on to say, to address these challenges, build on the administration's rural economic strategy and improve the implementation of that strategy, the president has signed an executive order establishing the White House Rural Council. Strong rural communities are key to a stronger America, said President Barack Obama. Oh, wow. That's why I've established the White House Rural Council, to make sure we're working across government. That is a weird statement. To make sure we're working across government to strengthen rural communities and promote economic growth. Well, here's an idea, Mr. President. Get the out of the way of business and let us grow our own economy. You know, that's what capitalism is about. Oh, geez. You know, I'm telling you right now, this is going to tie in directly to Obamacare. Because if you remember, in Obamacare, he sets up other rural councils to help bring medical care to rural communities, claiming that they don't have enough doctors. Now, this is an extremely interesting strategy. And I told you before, they're going to try to force us back into urban communities. So sending these people out there is a very, very interesting strategy. So I want to see what the heck they're going to come up with on this rural council. I love these executive orders. Well, you're listening to Southern Sense. Give me a shout out here. Someone pick up the phone and give me a call in here. The number is 917-889-3675. Talking about shortages, in today's business section of our paper, they're talking about how jobs are scarce and food prices are likely to stay high. Well, no, Sherlock. You know, in this past May, they've only added 54,000 new jobs. And Obama's claiming he's got, what, 2 or 3 million he's added in the past year? Uh-uh. If you take in census workers and you take in seasonal help for summer and Christmas or holiday time, can't say Christmas anymore, you know, maybe you can account for that. How about people that have been temporarily employed, laid off, and then temporarily employed and laid off, and temporarily employed and laid off? I guess they count each one of those as a single job. Well, now they're saying that because of gas prices and job loss and higher cost of production, food prices are going to go up. Well, gee whiz, what a brainstorm that one was. Haven't we been screaming that for the past couple of years? You know, taking corn and sugar beets and everything and using it to make ethanol, don't you think that's going to make the price of food increase? Because there's less corn production going towards food. They're turning around and they're saying that, you know, anyone that can produce food inexpensively is going to have the golden cash cow. And think about this. With everything that the government has been doing over the past decade, they basically have been forcing farmers out of business. They're paying them to not produce. And when they do produce, they're telling them to use these things that they are producing for biofuel. Or they decide to tax you on each head of cow and pig for their flatulence. It's amazing. It is absolutely amazing. And then they wonder why the price of food is going up. Gee whiz. Now, can you imagine? The EPA is trying to tax bovine and ovine flatulence. Why don't we turn around and for every politician that is in Washington, D.C., tax them for their flatulence from both ends? I like that idea. And now, because of today's economy, because houses aren't selling, they're now complaining about the falling prices of homes eroding homeowners' equity. Well, what do you think is going to happen when the price of your home drops? The amount of equity you have in the house is going to drop. All right, food prices go up, gas prices go up, jobs decrease. Oh, gee, and now clothing and other commodities are also increasing price. And in the interim, while everyone has nothing to buy these things with, they no longer can afford their homes, and the homes go into foreclosure, or instead of being used as a primary residence, are now used as a rental. Don't you think the prices of those homes are going to drop? And when the prices of these homes drop, so does the tax base of the community. They're bitching about this, saying government faults lenders on mortgage aid failures. Well, gee, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, Freddie and Fannie Mac, let's see, oh, Bonnie Plank, Chris Dodd, Rahm Emanuel getting tip mortgage from them, and then economists are predicting further decline in property values likely. Well, here, this is an economist. His name is Robert Shiller, and he co-founded the S&P Chase Shiller Index of Home Prices. He said yesterday that further decline in property values of 10 to 25% will occur in the next 5 years. He's saying that home prices have already plunged 33% in 20 major cities from March, through March, from their peak in 2006. So this year alone, they're reaching their lowest level since 2003. The decline signaled a double dip in the index, which fell below its previous post-housing bubble low set in April 2009. Prices more than doubled from 2000 to 2006. So now they're dropping down to a 2003 level. Now that's scary, because in my home that I purchased in 2003, if it drops down to a 2003 level, I will lose approximately one-third of the value of my home. Now, that's interesting. That is very interesting. If it proceeds to continue to drop, I will lose 30% of my home value. Now, I wonder how many of you all out there are also finding the same thing. Then drop in home values does not mean that your rent's going to drop too, because now the cost to heat, to light that home is going to increase. The cost to maintain it is going to increase because of all the commodities values that are going to increase. $4 a gallon gas is not helping this. So don't think about your rent going down, because it's not. Simply because the equity has dropped does not mean the mortgage payments have dropped. It doesn't mean that the interest that's being charged on those accounts is going to drop. It's a nasty, nasty situation out there. Now, I did have something over here on this one, and I can't seem to find this little tape. But we're going to turn around, and this is going out to I've got to play this for Obama. This has got to be Beatles, Fool on the Hill for him. Mr. Obama, this is out to you.
Day after day, alone on a hill, the man with the foolish grin is keeping perfectly still. But nobody wants to know him, they can see that he's just a fool. And he never gives an answer, but the fool on the hill sees the sun going down and the eyes in his head.
That's out there to Mr. Obama. Actually, I really should have played that for Donald Trump. Has anyone caught the Donald's latest rant up on the internet? Oh, man. This clown is saying he wants to pop. He's saying if the Republicans do not place someone he approves of as the presidential candidate against Obama, he's going to throw his hat back into the ring. Donald Trump, he's the gift that just keeps on giving. Does anyone love to hear himself and see himself on TV any more than this man does? I honestly don't think so. I truly and honestly don't think so. I thought I had downloaded the clip on him on that one, and I guess it didn't take. Oh, what a shame. What a shame, because I did have the Don on this one. There's a new video up on YouTube, and it's, you know, it's really sad. And he said it's absolutely ridiculous about the bridge. What is he saying? He's saying that the Republicans are attempting a bridge-building fashion. Now, if you're looking at the fight that's going on in Joe Biden's deficit budget commission, that's not much of a bridge-building fashion I can see over there, because the Republicans have actually drawn the line in the sand. So I have no idea what the Don's talking about on this one. But he says, it's really sad what's happening with the Republicans. When I look at what they've done, it's going to be very hard for them to win. I'm watching very carefully. If the wrong person is nominated, you watch what happens with Donald Trump and what he does, because we have to beat Obama. This country cannot last any longer with Obama as our president. And then he threatens to try to run again. And I said this before, when Obama and Trump were locking horns before, and he was calling for his birth certificate. And then when Trump finally just backed down and backed off and dropped out of the race, I said Trump is Obama's stooge. He's setting the stage. He is actually setting the stage for Obama to win. I'm telling you that. Watch what Trump does and watch what he says. He is, I'm going to say it, he's an Obama butt boy. And he's setting the stage. He's going to deliberately stick his foot in the Republican primary. He's going to try to influence it as deep as possible so we get the weakest Republican nominee out there. He's going to do everything and anything he can to derail us. Don't listen to this man. And then he's going to turn around and set the stage for Obama to do another 4 years. I'm warning you. I'm warning you. I'm warning you. And when he does it, I'm going to step back and say, I told you so. You know, I love the fact that Trump stirs the pot, but right now, the way he's doing it is going to hurt us deeply. He is going to hurt us deeply. He's also taken a cue from Gingrich, saying it almost seems as if the Republicans have a death wish. He went further on to say, when they tamper with Medicare, they have a death wish. This is not going to happen, and I frankly will protect Medicare. It's not going to happen. You can't win an election if you're going to be playing games with America. Medicare. Fix it, make it better, but the Democrats are laughing at the stupidity of the Republicans and this Ryan plan. The Republicans are going to lose control of the House. This is what Trump says in his video, and I'm sorry I didn't have it here to upload. I honestly thought I had taken it, and I guess I kind of screwed that one up. So I'm warning you, Trump is actually, I'm telling you, he is setting the stage. You know, ask yourself, why does Donald Trump have more people that he donated money to for their campaigns that are Democrats than there are Republicans? Got to ask yourself that. Have to ask yourself that. And he's complaining about the budget. Well, this is Eric Cantor's take on the budget. Here we go.
Good afternoon. Just a brief statement. Listen, the news economically on the jobs front over the last couple of days, I think, underscore the importance of this meeting that we just came out of. And there's a commitment for next week, engaging once again in a robust series of meetings to see if we can achieve a result. We believe that much of the problem surrounding the lack of job creation and growth in this country has to do with the fact that there isn't a credible plan to manage down the debt deficit in this country. That's what we're trying to produce here, and we had much substantive discussion today and look forward to more next week.
Well, that was Cantor yesterday coming out of the Biden Budget Commission, and it's going to be an interesting fight, and the Republicans are vowing they're not going to have it unless they're not going to raise the ceiling unless they have a balanced budget amendment out there to be voted on to go to the American people for a constitutional amendment. I want to see that happen. Now, talk about another maneuver Obama is making. He's trying to bring in Elizabeth Warren as the what is this that he wants her for? He wants her. Right now, she's running the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, all right? And they want her to take that appointment. Meanwhile, she's been trying to run against Scott Brown for the seat in Massachusetts for senator. So they're willing to turn around and sacrifice her for Senate in Massachusetts to have her become this Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Now, got a caller on the line. I believe this is Cool Mike. Well, if I can hit the microphone. And here we go. Is that you, Mike?
It sure is. Boy, politics is a dirty business, isn't it, Annie?
What'd you do, chase everyone out of my chat room?
No, they're like 10 feet from me. They're on the sidewalk enjoying smoke, as the younger generation says.
Oh, you got your classic cafe going on.
Yeah, I'm actually leaving. I'm heading into work. But, yeah, we were all together. They kind of followed me out to the sidewalk.
Well, enjoy those cigarettes, because they want to plop another, I think, a 50-cent tax more on it. And they also want to tax your gasoline another 50 cents.
Is that it? In this rural area, first of all, the picture in your description with the guy in the tuxedo, who is that? Is that Joe Wilson?
No, that's Alan Wilson, his son.
Oh, okay.
That was from Nikki Haley's inaugural ball.
No, you looking sharp, Ernie. Dang.
Yeah, well, that was the new haircut and the new hair dye.
Yeah, this rule thing is a red flag for me. But anything Barack Obama does, if he says, excuse me, I need to use the bathroom, that's a red flag. He's up to no good for me.
Now, what I find funny is that Trumpka is, AFL-CIO Trumpka, is pushing for Elizabeth Warren to go on to this Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Now, what does the AFL-CIO have to do with this Consumer Financial Protection Bureau?
Well, I think what's happening is the decline of the local union. Barack Obama has chummed up with the federal-type union, and basically they're trying to create kind of a union Gestapo, is what I think is happening.
Yeah.
Whereas the member means nothing. It's the bureaucracy, and that's the only way of really actually preserving any type of remnants of what's left of the old smaller type union. But that's a red flag too, because that's more of a gangster type. Not necessarily they come in your home and burn it down, but it's more of a they become so powerful that Go ahead.
I'm just curious how the AFL-CIO can get their fingers into the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau unless they're looking to unionize banks.
Well, they're looking to do something, because obviously what's going to happen is Barack is going to come down on these banks that haven't spent, utilized the stimulus money. So basically, in many ways, Annie, we're already, the federal government already has a major share of these banks. So in many ways, he hasn't done it yet, but in many ways, the federal government is the major shareholder and can make decisions regarding those businesses.
Well, you've got the Progressive Change Campaign Committee that's got a petition out there to get her appointed. Now, that group in itself, you just listen to the name, Progressive Change Campaign Committee. And the other one is Campaign for America's Future, Richard Hickey. And he's also got another 20,000 or more signatures trying to get Obama to make this recess appointment. And this is amazing that they're willing to give up the Massachusetts seat. Obviously, I don't think it's that important to have her take this appointment. And the fact that Richard Trumpka and the AFL-CIO is behind it is very, very scary.
Well, Scott Brown has turned out to be an Obama lackey. Party labels don't mean anything anymore. But the
no, that's what I'm saying. They're not worried about his seat because they know they can actually control it at this point because he is a rhino.
The old saying, if it's not broken, don't fix it?
Yeah. Well, this is scary, and hopefully Senator DeMint will keep up his word when he said no recess appointments. Because he said he has enough senators in his pocket. So I gather you give me a car to go to work.
No, I'm fine. I'm sorry. Are you getting any feedback from my mic? Oh, wait a minute. Not from the radio. Because if it's fine, no, I'm just driving. So I want to stay on and listen.
Okay.
So
no.
The owner solved this problem on Fridays with me showing up late because I'm listening to your show. Is starting Monday, he's going to have Wi-Fi in the restaurant.
So you can listen to it when you go in and out of the kitchen.
Yeah, he says, come at 2 o'clock, he says, and just, you know, listen to the show. I'm like, that's actually a good idea because some people who get off early on Fridays, especially in the summertime, they come in and they sit at the bar. Well, you know, a couple times they've asked me, what are you listening to? So I put the phone on the bar, and, you know, I unplug the headset, and we kind of just listen there on mute. Well, I mean, this will be kind of cool. That way, if anyone wants to air in the conversation, although you're just, you have me on the line, there's four people surrounding the phone. So we can all kind of weigh in our, start World War III right there in the little club.
Well, I'll tell you what you have to do is email me the information on the bar that you're going to be at, that you're working at, and I will make an on-air announcement that I'm talking, that they're being listened to right there.
Oh, that's cool. That'll be a lot of fun. Getting back to the politics at hand, what do you think Barack Obama's, this, you know, all of a sudden he has internet czar who's going to help with this. Now all of a sudden he's going urban. I mean, just what in the world is that chocolate slime ball up to? Because you know it's not good.
No, it's not. It's not. And like you said, he's looking for taking control. And matter of fact, a friend of mine this morning sent me something about documents that show the FCC coordinated net neutrality effort with an outside group. And I didn't get to read this whole thing. I just kind of like buzzed through it. It was something that was published up on Judicial Watch. And there's evidence of coordination between FCC Democrats and Free Press. Emails between the former Free Press President John Silver and the Democratic FCC Commissioner Michael Koops from October 2010, and said how we'd like to proceed during these next 3 months in net neutrality. Documents summarizing a phone call between Silver and Koops in which, before an FCC vote on a proposal in November 2010, Silver himself emphasized that a strong net neutrality rule is critical to preserving the Internet as a vibrant forum for speech, commerce, innovation, and cultural expression. That sounds like a load of crap. And then correspondence between FCC Special Counsel David Tannenbaum and the Free Press Policy Director Ben Scott, coordinating speakers for a taxpayer-funded series of FCC Internet workshops that were intended to generate public support for the proposal. Sounds like a little coercion there.
It sounds like censorship to me, period, plain and simple. They always color-code it with workshops or words or, you know, just these phrases, the Patriot Act or, you know, just whatever. They use these words to basically, bottom line, censorship, more government intrusion.
Yeah, and I guess if they can get you by controlling your speech, they'll do it through net neutrality. And I'm telling you, this thing with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, they're going to try to control your finances somehow, and it's going to be union-related. And Trump, I'm telling you, he is one dirty, dirty SOB. And I don't know if you remember, they didn't even prosecute him. They didn't even prosecute him at all when he was funneling money back and forth on this AFL-CIO elections. They were looking for him on perjury charges. They were looking on him for money laundering on this one. And when they took him into the grand jury, he pleaded the Fifth Amendment. So the grand jury investigation and a congressional panel never charged him with any crimes. But an AFL-CIO policy said anyone who asserts the Fifth Amendment rights is to be removed from office. Trumka was never removed from office.
Well, that's because his backing is either, one, business people we don't know about, or number two, the federal government.
Yeah.
Could be a little of both, too, because as we know, when you get to that level, you've double-dip a lot. I mean, you're in a position to take kickbacks from both ends.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this is Trumka when he's talking about his White House visits, and I have to key this up loud because the audio is not that great. Catch what Trump has said, and I think you may have heard this before.
How often does the White House, do you get to have conversations with the White House?
Conversations or vehicles?
I'm a big White House. I mean,
I met the White House a couple of times.
Okay.
Two, three times. sometimes with the guy. I have conversations every day with someone in the White House or in the administration. Every day.
One of the things that really surprised me, I've been talking for a while about why doesn't the president use cabinet officials. You report that, in fact, there were half a dozen cabinet members who had not heard from the president personally, had not gotten a phone call from the president, or had an opportunity to be one-on-one with him in the first 2 years.
And this person said, you know, I've had individual meetings with all the cabinet members, and he was shocked to hear that a number of them, he said a half a dozen, had never had a single phone call from the president in the course of the first 2 years up until that point. That is a pretty dramatic thing because it tells you not only the president wasn't listening to people outside the administration, he wasn't even listening to senior members of the administration. He was really only listening to a very small group of people.
Isn't that scary now? Trump, I don't know if you heard it, said he ends up going to the White House 2 to 3 times a week. He has conversations almost daily with White House appointees, but these appointees haven't even had a phone call from the president himself in almost 2 years. Now that's scary.
Well, that's business as usual. First of all, Barack Obama is, who knows who he's being controlled about. I think you can go back and look at presidents like Reagan and Ike and some other ones, and you know they were the president. They led. Nobody was leading them. Whereas it's hard with Barack Obama because, in all honesty, he is being spun in so many different directions. If we thought Bush was an idiot, I mean, there's a new sheriff in town who's a class valedictorian, and that's Barack Obama. And this is really scary. If this guy is capable of getting another term, God knows what kind of thugs this guy is going to reenact as far as with the federal government. And, you know, like I said, it could be that they want to basically rebuild the union in a socialist network. And, you know, they have their perfect gangster, I should say, to lead that charge.
Now, it's true, and it's amazing, because I played a clip, I know, a while back of Saeed Farik, who is a CNN correspondent and contributor, and he's saying that he's constantly talking to the White House, giving them advice on foreign policy. They've had several other members of the press that have been consulting with him, giving him advice. Now you've got the AFL-CIO, Trumka, doing the same thing. You've got SEIU, what's his name, in there almost every single day. He's not listening to his advisors. He's listening to everyone else but. And look at the crap that we had with Valerie Jarrett turning around telling him, oh, no, don't go after Obama, where Panetta and Hillary Clinton were the ones saying, you've got to do this now. And Valerie Jarrett said, no.
Don't get me started on that girl, Annie. I'll take your show all the way to the end.
Oh, I guess you're in love with Valerie Jarrett.
Oh, my God. You know, here is, I don't know why they don't take a page out of local politics. I'm like 15 for 15 in establishing the local unions. For one thing, you let them start out non-union. And then as time goes on, some of these places realize, hey, it would be better because basically they see the problems. So, and it doesn't solve all the problems. But when you are forced, like a federal union is a federal government. So, I mean, you accomplish just as much, which means you accomplish nothing. And this guy's a pure thug. I mean, pure, through and through. And when he's talking to Obama, basically, and he's talking to these other people that have not talked to Obama, where there's smoke, there's fire.
No, it's true. My question is how can you have the government and the union be one in the same entity? And that's essentially what happens when you have a federal employee that's a union member. How does the government now negotiate contracts not just for the union members' salaries and packages, but now think about all the contracts they would get from companies such as Boeing that has a unionized shop? You got union, you know, negotiating with unions to give government contracts. What do you think is going to happen here? You got a non-union shop that's not going to be able to get in.
Well, I think what is happening at this last election, a lot of Republican governors were elected, and what's happening is they're kind of trying to do away with the union. Well, what's happening is that Barack Obama is going to form the federal union, which basically will trump the state union, because states are not together and unified, realizing that states control the federal government. We've allowed the federal government to take control, and this is what Barack Obama's plan is. Because, I mean, he's already got the leader that has proven himself to be a thug and corrupt and exactly what you want in a gangster union and in a leader. So basically that's what I think the game plan is that eventually there's no panic from Barack Obama about the states trumping these unions, because he knows he's going to come in and take care of it federally. And the members are going to support Obama, because they're not going to like the idea of the state basically saying we're going to do away with the union. So disguisingly, they don't realize it's still doing away with the union, but it's under a different label, using those cute words you were just talking about 15 minutes ago.
Yeah, but it's also going to be a massive vote buying. It's Obama's another way, another step for him to get himself reelected by controlling the unions and controlling the employees that rely upon the unions for their jobs. He's going to control the vote, saying, hey, I'm for the unions. I'm the one that's gotten you the union. I'm the one that's gotten you all these little benefits and everything else. If you don't vote for me, you're going to lose your job, is what he's going to do.
Well,
and what are you going to do? Are you going to vote for him, or are you going to vote for the Republican?
Well, not just that, but they're going to reach out to other forms of workers that the state is trying to privatize and do other things. But yes, this goes way back. I mean, JFK was involved in the same way. He was not quite as open about it, but he knew about it for years. This has all been like that. You buy votes. You scare vote. You get votes with scare tactics. You don't get all your votes, but it's a big part of the elections, especially in an election, Annie, when you know it's going to be close, a la Nixon, Kennedy, a la George Bush, Al Gore. You really need those extra couple thousand votes, because you never know. It's a winner take all. It's a winner take all per state election, not necessarily the majority of the vote. Therefore, each state becomes key.
Now, talking about the elections, how do you like the implosion of Gingrich?
Well, Gingrich kind of imploded himself.
I like
what Newt has to say. I mean, I always liked him. He was kind of my role model that I watched learn with speaking, learning how to speak publicly. But the bottom line is, since the day he announced his campaign, he may as well have honestly just gone out and, I mean, just told people to F-O. Because every single time I see him on TV, he's not gaining votes. He's almost like creating another group that doesn't like him.
Exactly. Yeah, he is doing a self-implosion. And the worst part is his staff, the reason why they walked out finally, because the very last straw on that camel's back that broke it, is his staff, when they walked out, he wanted to go on his Caribbean vacation, I think to the Bahamas or something like that. I forget where. And they're saying you're in the middle of a campaign mode. The last thing you want to do with everything that's hitting the fan right now is to go on vacation. It doesn't look good. It's looking like you don't care about the direction the country's going in. And he said, like you said, screw you, and he's doing what he wants. And it looks like? He's looking like he's doing the same thing Obama does. You know, you get the flood and the tornadoes out in the Midwest, so what's he do? He goes over and has a few beers in Ireland. You know, what was the point of that? So it's not looking good.
You make a decision to run, you make a decision, and you do it to win. He's not even doing it to compete.
No.
So I'm going to go wait for about 5 minutes. I'll be right back. Okay?
Well, have
keep
fun.
Me on
take
hold.
Care. All right. All right, we've been talking to Cool Mike. You know him as CC Cougar 11 here on Blog Talk Radio, and Cool Mike works with GGT 183 on shows there. We've been talking about a whole mess of different things. I'm going to take a little bit of a switch from tactic, and this is something that came across today's newspaper, and when I started reading it, I almost fell on the floor laughing and damn near peed in my pants. Sorry about being politically incorrect, but you know what? I don't care. There's this thing in the article. This came out of Bloomberg News. President Obama is considering payroll tax breaks. Gee, where have we heard this before? Gee, we seem to have heard this before. Oh, I know, Bush tax cuts. The very same Bush tax cuts he swore never to extend and was forced to extend by a Republican Congress. Well, now President Obama has finally had an epiphany, and he's seeking a temporary cut in payroll taxes, business pay on wages, as they debate ways to spur hiring amid signs that the recovery is slowing. Gee, how about 9.1% unemployment? Do you think that's enough of a hint, Mr. Obama, when you said we'd never go above 8? Well, his idea is in the preliminary stages right now of discussion, supposedly, but among several that have talked at the White House, the administration and Congress said that they are in deliberations. All right, let me see what else they have to say about here. I'm looking, just bear with me as I scan through this real, real fast. All right, the idea of cutting employer contribution to payroll taxes has been under discussion among Republican members of Congress. Let's see. And it's semi-serious, not with a lot of urgency, says Hulse Erkin. But this, doesn't this sound familiar? Now, there was a temporary break on employer payroll taxes. This was done under George W. Bush. The package included a 2% point reduction on employee contributions to the payroll tax during 2011. So now President Obama, in his infinite wisdom, said, oh, if the Republicans do it, it's not going to work. It's a tax cut for the rich. But now if President Obama decides to do it, it's going to work because it's a tax cut for the employees. But isn't this the very same tax package that Bush put in? It's like a Daha moment. Now, is this a tax cut for the rich or is it a tax cut for the employees? So it sounds like I got Cool Mike back on the air.
Yeah,
and just
sorry
to fill him
about
in,
Danny,
I'm talking about
the
Obama
proposal
on payroll tax breaks. And this is the very same tax break that gave a 2% payroll tax cut on employee contributions to the payroll tax, the George W. Bush tax break. So it's cutting employee contributions by 2%, which also reduces employer contributions. Now, Obama and the Democrats and progressives called it a tax cut for the rich. Obama's proposing the same thing, and he's going to call it a tax cut for the working man. Is this not too funny?
That's basically the same thing, Annie. It's basically these politicians, they are so schooled on being legalized criminals and good with words, but it's basically the same thing.
It is. It's absolutely hysterical. Absolutely hysterical. And they're talking about trying to cut the budget and so on and so forth, and here now he's proposing a tax cut to stimulate the economy and help alleviate some of the budget. But, you know, think about the things that are in the budget. They keep on talking about Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, but these are things that they haven't put into the budget to cut. How about the Corporation for Public Broadcasting? That subsidy is $445 million. Then you've got the endowment, the National Endowment for Humanities, $167.5. You've got, here we go, a community development fund, $4.5 billion. Now, the question is how much is this Rural Development Commission going to cost us in the budget? We don't have those figures yet. You got the national, let's see, right, the applied research for the Department of Energy. Oh, this is something we really don't need, the Department of Energy. So why don't we just simply, instead of just cutting out this applied research, just cut out the entire Department of Energy and the EPA. That'll save a ton in the budget. Unused federal properties.
Annie, the bottom line is that the Republicans and the Democrats all need these departments because it does an awful lot for basically these parties. So that's why I like Ron Paul. Yeah, just eliminate all of them. And if you think about it, when they make fun of Ron Paul for wanting this, who makes fun of him? Who's against it? Both parties. Because realistically, they don't want smaller government. Smaller government doesn't benefit the party. it benefits the people, and that's what the parties don't want. It's almost like they want to keep reminding us why we need them.
Exactly, and the more we need them, the more they can guarantee a seat to be turned to the table. They know they'll get reelected, which is exactly why I believe Senator DeMint is correct in putting in these term limits. Take away that little carrot and stick. If you take away the carrot and stick and you put in term limits and you don't have the voter behooving to these clowns for guaranteeing these programs, we might have a better, more streamlined government. We might get something done.
Well, you had pointed out something good. I don't know whoever's listening. You had pointed out, about the term limits, and there was talk, I think it was our friend from Tennessee, Terry, mentioned, they would have their own little puppets. What term limits does do, yes, they do that, but what term limits does do, it gives people like Southern Sense and Cool Mike and Perry Steele and other people a good chance at running, because more or less, the littler person stands a better chance at winning, at getting in, because it opens the race up to a lot more competition for the littler person.
Right, it does. It's going to make the unknowns a lot more attractive. And when you have the knowns in there that are turning around, and every single year they keep on going, oh, we're going to increase the benefits for Medicaid. We're going to increase the benefits for extend unemployment no more from 99 weeks. We're going to give you 120 weeks. At that point, you're going to look at the unknown and say, hey, this clown we've heard before, let's put in you and just prove to us you're not a clown too. And I think you're right. You may end up finding new and bright ideas being opened up, and maybe government can be made more efficient and less invasive. So, yeah. Well, Mike, I know that you're at work, so I really don't want to hold you up. I'll keep your mic open, but it looks like I lost Mike. Anyway, you're listening to Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. In about 10 minutes, I am expecting a phone call from our State Attorney General, Alan Wilson, and we're going to be talking about the National Labor Relations Board and Boeing. We're also going to be talking about the Obamacare suit that is currently in court in front of a 3-judge panel in Atlanta, Georgia here. Actually, I'm South Carolina. That's Georgia, just south of me, for those who don't remember their geography. And it looks like Mike is trying to call back in. And if that's you, Mike, I got you back on.
Yeah, thanks, Annie. Getting to my point, I accidentally hung up, but to my point is that you hit a key spot here. During this unemployment recession that we're having, as we all know, many people are laid off. As we know, unemployment benefits and payments have just blown off the hook. Well, what's happened is Barack Obama has come along and said, you know what? The state only needs to pay like 5 weeks. We'll pick it up past there. And states are like, great, yeah, hell yeah. It's going to take away a lot of our, it's going to help us as far as we don't have to shell out that much benefits. A la the federal government gains more control over everybody then. And
well,
then in order for the federal government for it just to be great, they're like, we'll give you 120 weeks of it. And there are an awful lot of unemployed, and that makes them feel safer and more secure. Other than they don't realize that there's a game within the game. And like it or not, like at this president, George Bush was an idiot. He didn't know the game. He was just a sold-out puppet. But this president is schooled in the game. I mean, he can take stuff out of the toilet and make people think it's delicious.
He probably recites the rules for Zelensky better than he can the Quran. No, I did not say that, did I?
Ooh, low blow.
Pardon me, Lord.
Low blow. Well, yesterday, last night, Tesler talked about his Sunday show, and he referred to his Barack Obama's princess as a fat-ass black bitch. That's
ooh.
What he called her. So,
Ooh, that's punching below the belt.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll listen in on Sunday. When he said it, I was just like, wow. But, I mean, here's the bottom line is that, Barack Obama is just – he is just brainwashing so many people that it almost scares me. And, I honestly think as unless a smoking gun hits, he's going to win 48 states. I mean, he has just manipulated and brainwashed so many people that are just fools, or scare tactic them into thinking we need him. That's,
well, I hope you're wrong, because I think, I don't know if you heard this bit with Dick Armey from CPAC 2010, and if you can get someone like Dick Armey to get behind a solid, good candidate, someone maybe like Pawlenty, and Pawlenty seems to be coming up from behind. I warned you, keep an eye on him. Now, this is Dick Armey, and you have to bear with the person that introduces him. I didn't have time to edit this all the way down to a shorter version, so I'll end up cutting it off soon. But she'll go through an intro.
Many people have been asking when I was doing so well and, in fact, leading in the poll.
No, that was Donald Trump. How the heck did I get Dick Armey under Donald Trump? Holy cow. Well, just for fun, I'm going to play the Donald Trump. I thought I had Dick Armey here. It's labeled Dick Armey. The wrong Dick. No.
Many people have been asking when I was doing so well and, in fact, leading in the polls, why didn't I decide to run for president? The fact is that numerous things happened. Number one, the Republican Party. They had a lame duck session in Congress, and the Republicans gave a new lease on life to Obama. They made an agreement with him. It was absolutely ridiculous what they did, and he was resurrected. He became the Phoenix. It was like a new man. Number two, Paul Ryan's plan. The timing of this plan was so bad. I happen to think the concept was bad also. It almost seems as though the Republicans have a death wish. When they tamper with Medicare, which happens to be a good program, but there's lots of fraud and waste, which we should take care of. But when they tamper with Medicare, they have a death wish. This is not going to happen. And frankly, I would protect Medicare. It's not going to happen. You can't win an election if you're going to be playing games with Medicare. Fix it, make it better. But the Democrats are laughing at the stupidity of the Republicans and this Ryan plan. The Republicans are going to lose control of the House. It is unbelievable what he did. There was no reason for him to step out. He's a bad chess player. The fact is, he should have sat back. It was Obama's problem, and let Obama come up with a plan and then criticize the plan. For him, who just got this position as the head, to come out with his own plan, and by the way, already you've lost one election in an area in Buffalo, upstate New York, where the election couldn't have been lost. This plan, and in particular the timing of this plan, is a total disaster. Then we take a look at the $38 billion in spending cuts. Well,
all right, I can't take Donald Trump anymore after that. I'm sorry. But I had to play that bit with Donald Trump. I honestly thought it says Dick Armey, and I screwed that one up. I can't be perfect all the time. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, I am waiting for our State Attorney General, Alan Wilson, like I said, to call in on the NLRB. We'll be talking to him about that and going after Boeing here in North Charleston, trying to unionize a plant that is in a right-to-work state, as well as the Obama lawsuit, the Obamacare lawsuit going on right now, where we've got a three-judge panel in Georgia and two Democratic appointees and one Republican appointee. However, the questions they are asking is making it look, and my fingers are crossed, that they will rule in favor of our side and then nullify or declare unconstitutional the mandate. Now, this is our treasurer, Curtis Loftus, that has been on the show previously, and this was his appearance on Fox News with Fox Business News with Stu Varney. And I know some of you aren't fans of him, but tough. Curtis Loftus kind of like nails it here also.
The NLRB wants Boeing to unionize one of its plants just outside Charleston, South Carolina. That state's state treasurer, Curtis Loftus, is live with us now from Columbia. So welcome to the program. Very good to have you with us.
Nice to see you, Stuart. It's always great to be back on Fox.
Now, am I right in saying that, Boeing's already built this factory, that it's there, it's standing, but the NLRB is standing in the way of opening it up and producing products there because they want to force unionization? Have I got the story right, sir?
That's exactly right. Boeing was looking for an additional location for its one of its plants. We competed in that. The state gave a fantastic economic incentive package, and we won the plan. And so now that it's here, the NLRB would like to be able to take it back to Everett, Washington, and we just don't think that's right. It's simply non-competitive. It's an anti-business stance from the NLRB, and it's just wrong.
How much is it costing your state?
Well, I haven't seen it quantified yet. We have over $200 million invested in Boeing, and we expect them to stay. And not only is it just Boeing, but the knockoff. I mean, the number of suppliers that are coming to South Carolina has exceeded our expectations. We keep seeing more and more people coming here because it's a favorable business climate. You know, Boeing is the largest exporter in America. Its number one competitor is Airbus, which is a consortium of foreign governments and foreign-owned banks. You know, we don't need the United States of America to join those governments in being competitive influence to Boeing.
Of course, Mr. Treasury, it raises the question, who's next? If they can do this with Boeing.
Exactly right.
Stopping them moving to a right-to-work state. Who's next? But my question is, what can you do about this? Your state is suffering because of this. Is there anything you can do?
Well, there's a lot we can do. And the governor and the attorney general are on this with all force. They're filing lawsuits. The governor's reached out to the governors of the other states. Everybody understands where this is going. It's just anti-competitive. These rules from the NLRB will keep businesses in states that aren't competitive, and therefore their only choice is to move overseas. As we look around, as I listen to the information you've been giving out for the last few minutes, we're in a jobless economy. We've got to have jobs. And if we don't have jobs created in America, then they'll be created outside of America. We need Boeing, and the federal government ought to be a good partner to Boeing, not a threat.
I have a very fast question for you, sir, because this is Red Ink Week here on the Fox Business Network, and a real fast question about South Carolina. When it comes to balancing your budget, are you raising taxes or cutting spending? What are you doing?
Both. We cut our spending. We're pleased about that. We have the same problem that everybody has about pensions. Our pension plan is headed the wrong direction, but we're focused on all of that. We're a conservative state. We have a AAA credit rating, and we're going to protect that at all costs.
All right. Curtis Loftus, South Carolina's state treasurer. We appreciate you being with us, sir. Very busy day. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, sir.
Honestly, I think the best thing I ever did in my life was to flee the progressive state of New York and come here to the garden corner of the world, South Carolina. We have a caller on the line, and I do believe this is my guest caller. Good afternoon. This is Southern Sense. I'm your host, Anya Bellis.
Hey, this is Alan Wilson. How are you today?
Hi, Alan. We're listening to your coworker, Curtis Loftus, with Stu Varney.
Yeah, I just heard the tail end of Curtis. I think he's doing a great job.
Oh, he is. He's a fantastic job. And he's been a guest on our show previously, right after you the last time.
Oh, well, I'm glad that he gets to be my warm-up act this time.
Yeah, and matter of fact, in today's Gazette, there was an article about the lawsuit that you've initiated, and you and the Attorney General in Texas have placed a brief on that one, on the NLRB and the Boeing case.
Yes, ma'am. The Attorney General Greg Abbott, who's the Attorney General of Texas, our two offices co-authored an amicus brief that we're filing before the National Labor Relations Board in its suit against the Boeing plant here in Charleston, South Carolina. This is an issue that when it first came out, everyone kept thinking this is, you know, about South Carolina and it's about Boeing. But quickly, as I traveled the country and I spoke to other AGs in other states, we realized that this is far larger than just the company that is Boeing in the state of South Carolina. This is about the ability for businesses, whether you're Boeing or whether you're a mom-and-pop shop, to be able to make the best business decisions, to be able to relocate your business or expand your business or move your business or do whatever with your business that you see fit, as long as it's legal, but to be able to make those decisions without the government telling you that you can't. And what we have here is we have a government agency motivated by a union bias to try to stop Boeing from doing something that any other business in the world should be able to do, and that is expand their operation and create jobs. And what the unions on the left coast want to do is they want to pull back Boeing, and they want to keep those jobs over there for the union membership. We're not against unions, but we are for promoting job growth across the country, and especially here in South Carolina, and that's what this suit's about.
Now, that I agree, and I've previous business owner, small business owner. I've also managed several businesses, as well as being a retired New York City police officer. So I've seen it from all different sides, and I still am flabbergasted with the audacity that they are mandating where a business can and cannot open. But they are not turning around to any business saying you cannot take your business overseas. They're just saying that you can't move it within the United States.
I'm sorry, you broke up there just for a second. Could you say that one more time?
Okay. I was amazed at the audacity that they mandate where a business can or cannot open and function, but they do not prevent any business from leaving the United States to open overseas.
Well, absolutely, and you touched on something that I was going to expand on. It's a good comment. Think about the incentive, how this incentivizes businesses. Now, whether if you're a listener and you're listening to this show right now, think about this for a second. Whether you're pro union, you're against union, or whatever your proclivity is, think of it like this: if a business owner is in a right to work state and they don't have a legal office core like a big company like Boeing does, you're going to be less inclined to want to expand your business. If you're in a union state, you're going to be scared to expand your business beyond the borders of that union state. Not even remove jobs from the union state, just expand your business, because you don't have the legal capacity to defend yourself. So you'll keep your mouth shut and not incur the legal expenses. If you're in a right to work state and you want to expand your business to another state, there's no way you will ever want to go to a union state to grow your business. Therefore, the union states get hurt by this. Everybody is a loser under this model of doing business with the National Labor Relations Board. Everybody loses, and the biggest casualty of all are jobs.
Now, that's true. And matter of fact, there are three employees of Boeing, of the new plant here in Charleston, that have joined in this lawsuit, isn't there?
Well, they were denied intervention by the administrative law judge. So they're not allowed to intervene on this case at this time. The argument is that their interests are adequately represented. I don't agree with that, but that is the case as it stands right now.
Oh, I didn't realize that they got tossed out. What would their recourse be at that point then?
Well, I mean, they can ask for reconsideration. Obviously, as Attorney General, I plan to represent the interest at the appropriate time, which is one of the reasons we filed an amicus brief, which for those out there who don't know what an amicus brief is, it's a friend of the court brief. It's basically supplemental information that a party can give to a court to consider when looking at a disagreement between two parties. In other words, NLRB and Boeing have a disagreement. We're saying, hey, court, this is why we think Boeing is right and NLRB is wrong. So we are representing the interest of all those aggrieved employees out there, those employees that could be aggrieved if Boeing were to be run out, which, by the way, they will not. We will not let that happen, Boeing. In fact, I was at the ribbon cutting today. But Boeing, we cut the ribbon today. I was there, and as the building is about 20 football fields in square footage. It's been built, and they're ready to start rolling planes off. Boeing is here for generations to come. But having said that, our office is prepared to represent the interest of those employees that are down there in Boeing, as well as all citizens in South Carolina, not just employees, but also the small business owners, because this affects us all. But the Attorney General of Texas, Greg Abbott, and I, and 15 other AGs from all over the country have filed an amicus with the NLRB. By the way, this is not the end for us. We are prepared to ratchet up I don't want to say the rhetoric, but the legal action as required and when necessary. So we are prepared to go to the next level at the appropriate time. But as for right now, we want to see how Boeing is going to fare in front of this administrative law judge.
Well, I guess you're taking off your Peter Parker mask, Spider-Man, there.
Oh, you remembered that story.
Matter of fact, did you get the picture I sent to you from Governor Haley's inauguration?
Oh, I got stacks of them. Which picture?
Was you and I standing together.
Okay. I have a stack of photos, and I've been gone 3 out of the last 4 weeks, so please forgive me if I've been delayed in looking at those. You're going to have to tell your listeners at some point in the future what that joke was about.
Oh, I definitely will. I'll embarrass you. Don't worry.
No, please do.
Matter of fact, you also have another lawsuit with Obama on the health care issue.
Yes, ma'am. I was in Atlanta on Tuesday morning I was there with five other AGs. There are 26 states that have joined on this lawsuit in the 11th Circuit. Five of the AGs were represented there. I was one of them. Sat right on the front row, right behind Paul Clement, who's the former Solicitor General under President Bush, who was arguing the case on behalf of the 26 states. And he did an excellent job representing our interest. We've been consulting with him throughout the last several months. And throughout the oral arguments, he made a very clear case on why the government is wrong and the states are right. And the judges, it was very telling. Two of the three judges that were on the panel asked this question. Or I shouldn't say it's a question, it was a statement. They stated that they were unable to find at any point in the history of this country and all the case law and jurisprudence out there where Congress had reached this far under its commerce power. There's no precedent for what the federal government is doing under this Health Care Act.
Yeah, you're talking about the circuit judges Frank Hull and Stanley Marcus, who are both appointed by President Clinton. Now, the third one is Judge Joel
Dubina,
right, who was appointed by George H.W. Bush.
Now, I know Judge Hull, she was appointed by Clinton, and I believe Judge Marcus was appointed by Clinton to the appellate court. I may be wrong, but I believe I read the other day that he had originally been appointed by the first Bush to the circuit court, and then, by Reagan to the circuit court, and then subsequently to the appellate court by Clinton. Judge Dubina is a Bush appointment.
Wow, it's interesting. That is very interesting. So we're all got our fingers crossed on this one. And there's a website that I did find. And I found it very interesting because I think the listeners should know about it, healthcarelawsuits.org. Are you familiar with that one?
Actually, I haven't been to that website yet.
They break down what they call the Healthcare Constitutional Primer, where they break it down by the article and section of the Constitution and where it's been violated. Something I did in my blog back when the healthcare first came out.
Well, that's a good. I'm glad you're putting that out there for people to look at. You know, healthcarelawsuits.org.
Healthcarelawsuits.org. Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's a wonderful resource, and people should go look at it. Let me, without even going to the website, let me frame an issue that came up in the court that causes me great concern, and should cause your listeners great concern.
Mm-hmm.
For those that have followed this healthcare lawsuit, people understand that there are certain enumerated powers that the Constitution has given Congress under Article 1. And any powers not enumerated are reserved to the states under the 10th Amendment. In other words, the states retain the power if they're not enumerated to Congress. One of those powers is under the Commerce Clause. Now, under that Commerce Clause, Congress can regulate economic activity. And there are several ways to regulate economic activity. I'm not going to go into that much detail. But one thing that I think most everybody agrees on, that the individual mandate, which requires an individual to go enter into a private contract for insurance, is not economic activity for purposes of the commerce power given to Congress. It doesn't constitute – the act of doing nothing, sitting at home on your couch, is inactivity. It's not economic in nature. It's just the lack of doing an action. One of the issues that came up in the court that one of the judges asked was, well, isn't this an economic decision? And my answer and retort to that is everything that we do in the world, nearly, I can't imagine it not being, but nearly everything that we do is an economic decision. Your decision to buy gas at this gas station over that gas station, your decision to buy a hamburger from McDonald's as opposed to a slice of pizza from Pizza Hut, your decision to go rake your own yard or hire some lawn care service to come clean your yard, those are all economic decisions. They're very normal, rudimentary, everyday decisions. If the argument by the folks in the government who take the position of this administration that Congress can regulate anything that involves an economic decision, well, then my argument is every decision nearly that we make is economic in nature. So is Congress going to be allowed to say, you know, GM's not doing well, we need to mandate that you buy a GM car? Oh, well, Mr. Citizen, you're getting overweight, you need to go down and join a gym membership with Gold's Gym and start getting in shape. Are they going to regulate every nook and cranny of our lives? And that is not what our founders envisioned when they crafted the Constitution.
Now, it's funny you mentioned the thing about Gold's Gym, because there is a section inside Obamacare that does promote physical health in that manner by telling people to go to gyms and stuff like that. I didn't know if you were aware of that.
Well, I had heard that before. I was just carrying it to its next logical conclusion, because when you buy health insurance, you're entering into a private contract to insure yourself. It's like entering into a private contract to join a membership at a club or a gym, or a private contract to hire somebody to do something. If the government can make you enter into a private contract to do that, they can make you buy a certain car. They can make you enter into a private contract to join a gym. They can make you do anything that they want. And my view is that, you know, we're talking about individual liberties. We're talking about state sovereignty. We're talking about the ability to live your life as you see fit, and not have the government dictate to you every little decision you could possibly make. And people out there that want big government because they like the perks and the privileges that government affords them, let me pose this to them. A government big enough to give you everything you want is big enough to take everything you have. And that is something that people need to constantly remind themselves of.
Right. That was Thomas Jefferson who said that, right?
Yes, ma'am. It was.
Making the gray cells work here. And talking about government interference, we've got two other issues that you're working really, really heavy on, and one of them is one of our favorite things, the EPA, and you issued a press release back in March about going after the EPA and their rapid implementation of its greenhouse gas regulatory program. Now, this one is a mind-bending thing. We're actually going to ban the construction of multitude of different types of buildings.
Yes. Yeah, the EPA, I've renamed it the Employment Prevention Act, or the Employment Prevention Agency. I borrowed that from Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli. I thought it was actually kind of interesting. But what the EPA is seeking to do is what Congress was not able to do under their cap and trade legislation, and it is seeking to control the emission of greenhouse gases through regulatory measures. So instead of having an open and honest debate on the floors of Congress by elected officials that represent all the citizens of this great land, the administration has saw fit to take a bureaucratic agency and use that agency with unelected bureaucrats in there to impose the same types of regulations they couldn't pass by law, but do it by regulatory fiat. And I've told people that we are a nation of citizens who are represented by elected representatives. I do not want to be a nation of individuals who are ruled by bureaucrats who administer by regulated fiat. We need to have people who are answerable to the public, and these regulatory bureaucrats are basically trying to apply the Clean Air Act, which is an act that's designed to, you know, regulate the type of emissions that happen up in the stratosphere. You know, we're talking about macro level geology here, or not geology, but, you know, dealing with the macro area in the environment. They're trying to, you know, control gases up there. They're using that Clean Air Act to try to control how much greenhouse gases that are emitted by a lawnmower engine, or by a Best Buy box store, or by a church, or by a residence. And so it's hard enough in this environment that we're in, this economic environment we're in, for someone to go out there and build a home or build a strip mall. There are enough local permitting requirements that people have to jump through to get, you know, that's hard enough. But now they're going to have to go to the EPA to get the EPA to bless whether or not, if you live in ABC Town, USA, you have to go to the EPA to get a blessing to build, you know, a home or a church or a strip mall. And that is not the purpose of the EPA. You know, if the EPA is seeking to regulate, you know, carbon emissions, well, then that means it can regulate anything that breathes, not just lawnmowers and buildings, but people. And so it's just another way to rule by regulation. And so this is something that we are very, very concerned about. I've worked with many other AGs around the country on this. Ken Cuccinelli, who's the Attorney General in Virginia, has taken a lead on this, but we've quickly gotten engaged on it. And I have a great concern that the federal government is attempting to rule individuals through the EPA's regulations. They're attempting to rule individuals' decisions through the NLRB actions, and they're attempting to rule individuals' decisions over whether or not to enter into a private contract through Obamacare. So it's a grab by government everywhere you look.
Yeah, and you've got 21 bipartisan attorney generals on this, which it's absolutely phenomenal. But I'm reading some of the names. You mentioned already Abbott and Cuccinelli, and you've got Bondi from Florida, you've got Horn in Arizona, and so forth. And matter of fact, a while back I had played a clip where Representative Cory Gardner in Congress was questioning Assistant Administrative Matthew Stanislaus about these EPA regulations that you just talked about. And Cory Gardner had asked Mr. Stanislaus what was the effect on jobs, and he was calling it an EPA economic package is how he was labeling it. And Gardner was really nailing him, saying, how can you call it an economic package when you do not take the cost of jobs in this? How many jobs are going to be gained or lost?
And he conceded that they hadn't considered that.
Right.
Yes,
right.
I watched the YouTube clip of it.
Oh, is it, it's like fingernails on the blackboard just trying to get him to answer.
I know. You know, they're talking about economic recovery and economic development, but they never take into consideration whether or not it hurts or helps jobs. That just blows my mind.
Yeah. It goes to show where the administration's going. I know we only got a few minutes left, and I know you can't stay on the line very much longer, but the last thing I'm going to hit you with is this immigration, especially that we have these new immigration laws here in South Carolina, a new one now just, I believe it's Alabama, or was it Arkansas that just did it? I forget which one that just implemented it. Alabama, I got that one.
Alabama, that's right.
Right, Alabama. But we've got these great laws, but there's no teeth because the federal government's not letting us implement them correctly.
That's right. And, you know, I'm a strong believer in the federalist system. You know, you have 50 states that have 50 independent governments. I call it the 50 laboratory experiment. And that's what makes our republic so great, is that some states will get it right, some states will get it wrong. The states that get it wrong will borrow from the states that get it right, and we're all better for it. And, you know, I believe that the states out there are performing a function that every sovereign state should be able to do, and that's protect its own borders, and especially the border states out there. You know, the federal government, we have this immigration problem because the federal government failed to do the job it was supposed to do in the beginning. And so I have no issue with the states taking whatever legislative and law enforcement measures that are necessary to secure their borders, to secure their jobs, promote the economic welfare of its citizens. And that's what these states are doing. And so I believe we're a great country, and the reason we're great is because we're diverse. We have immigrants. We're a nation of immigrants, people who have come from all over the world to make this a great melting pot. I like that. I love it that we're a diverse country. And I never have a problem with someone coming to my house. All I ask is they come through the front door, not through the window at 3 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, you can come in my house, you know, we can share, but we can break bread together, we can live a life together, just use the front door or use the gate to the side of the yard, just don't sneak through the side. And so these states out there, along with South Carolina, are opposing and trying to pass these immigration laws, are doing so because federal government's failing us. And so I support the immigration measures that are being implemented or attempting to be implemented, and we'll continue to support those.
Now, what I found, especially when I was working as a police officer, you would have someone that you would take into custody for whatever reason it is, and you knew this person was an illegal. But they would have 15 different Medicaid cards on them, several different identifications, and when you asked them their name, it never matched any of the identification. But we were, because it was New York City and it was a sanctioned city, prohibited from taking that step further and running them through. At that point, it was immigration. Now it's called ICE. We were prohibited from doing that. And I like the ability that South Carolina put the laws in, but getting the federal government out of the way and letting us enforce these laws is like pulling teeth.
Well, you know, allowing a police officer to follow his gut when it comes to probable cause, you know, you're taking the common sense out of law enforcement. Well, I shouldn't say common sense. Officers have common sense, but they're not allowed to act on it. And, you know, and there is a line. I mean, we don't want to impose on people's individual rights and liberties as they travel throughout our land. But at the same time, we have to give our law enforcement men and women the tools to protect us, not just protect us from crime, but to protect the sovereignty of our cities, our communities, and our states by preventing those who come here illegally and subvert the laws of the land. You know, those individuals, the Supreme Court has ruled they have constitutional protections. It seems to me, and I'm not against that, we all should be protected under the Constitution. The problem is that the federal government doesn't seem to care about the constitutional rights of its citizens that are here legally. They're more concerned about those that are here illegally, and that causes me great concern.
Now, that I agree with. Now, we've got only 5 minutes left in the clock, so now I'm going to put you on the line all the way here. You've got to tell the Spider-Man story.
The Spider-Man story. Okay. Well, you have a very good memory. When, you know, my biological father was killed when I was 4 years old in a helicopter crash. My mother was very blessed that she met, and well, she had already met my father prior. They were friends when they were in high school, but they reconnected when I was 4 years old, 2 years after my dad's death. They got married, and my dad, Joe, and my mother, Roxanne, took me to the local family court judge to adopt me right after they got married. And of course, my dad had me dressed in a little brown suit with, you know, the brown tie. You know, this is in the mid-70s. And he was dressed identical to me. I don't recall this. This is how the story's told. The judge comes into the courtroom, and we start signing the forms. And the judge asks me, he goes, "Young man, what's your name?"
Oh, well, wait a minute. Where were you? You weren't sitting. You were underneath the table, weren't you?
No, I was standing by my dad between my mother and father. Now, got to remember, this is how the story's been conveyed to me. I cannot prove its truth or veracity. I have to say this is how it was told to me. But when asked my name, the judge asked me my name. I said Peter Parker, and started crawling around the floor under the judge's table and all over the table around the floor. For those of you who don't know who Peter Parker is, that's Spider-Man's alias. Apparently, I was a big Spider-Man aficionado at the age of four. My mom and dad just thought that was hilarious, although they were mortified at the time. So here I am, 4 years old, acting like Spider-Man. Well, every single year for the last 34 years, 35 years, on my birthday or Christmas, I get something with Spider-Man on it. Here I am pushing 40. And my dad, to this day, still gives me something with Spider-Man on every major holiday as a tribute to the day that he adopted me. And so Spider-Man was always, when the movie came out, he and I went and saw it together. And, of course, he got emotional, as he often does. But that was kind of our little family joke, the Spider-Man story.
Well, I've never heard, until I heard your dad speaking about it on the show the first time he was on, about crying at a Spider-Man movie. I'm going, how do you cry at a Spider-Man movie?
He cries at Hallmark commercials. He's a crier. We went to the movie. My mother was on one side. Dad was on the other. The credits start rolling. I look over, and the man's ears are welled up with tears. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. You know, I'm 30 years old at the time, and he's just bawling because it reminded him of a very sentimental occasion.
Oh, it is. It's a very touching, very, very warm story. And you and Dad are two fantastic people. I really want to thank you so much because you said, your staff said 10 minutes, and you've been on about half an hour now.
Well, you and your listeners are important. I appreciate the interest that y'all have taken in these issues that are affecting our state. I really appreciate the faith and trust y'all have put in me to be your attorney general for at least 4 years to try to represent you on these major issues. I will never forget that I am merely a placeholder in this job, and y'all are my employers. And if I can ever do anything to serve the folks, yourself or your listeners, please call our office. We'll do our best to be responsive, and I truly look forward to seeing you soon and being on your show again.
Oh, thank you so much. And people in the chat room are making comments. One of them said we should bill the federal government for the illegal immigration enforcement that they failed to do. I like that.
That is funny.
Well, I will be talking with you and your office, and thank you so very much for coming back on, Attorney General.
Thank you so much, and I hope you have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Bye-bye.
That was our Attorney General, Alan Wilson. He is a son of Representative Joe Uli Wilson. And very glad that he did come on. And like I said, his staff said 10 minutes, and he was on for half an hour. I'm glad he was able to take all that time because these were four very, very important issues. I normally would be at Fratu Creek Restaurant and Bar and Restaurant tonight. Unfortunately, I've got a contractor here helping my husband with the front deck, and I've got another one that should be coming on the way to look at the yard. So I've got busy, busy, busy today and a busy weekend. But I hope you all enjoy your weekend and come back with us on the 14th, which is Flag Day. It's So I guess we'll be talking things patriotic on the 14th. But I do have a special guest coming back on the 24th. That will be our South Carolina Republican chair, Chad Connolly, who just got elected. So we'll see you all and have a great, great weekend. And I thank you for listening in. And until then, turn out the lights.
The party's over. They say that all good things must end. Call it a night.